At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is Emily Thomas, and you are listening to the Mom Struggling Well podcast. Welcome back to the Mom Struggling Well podcast. This is episode 132, and I'm excited to share with you my friend, Rob Berry. He is one of the pastors at our church. His wife, Leslie Berry, was episode 99, which all of you loved. Everybody loves Leslie Berry. Well, you are going to love her husband just as much. So Rob's main job at church is community building, which sounds kind of like a nightmare to me personally. You're in everybody's problems. Like, you only come in when nobody wants to see you and everyone's mad. You know, on second thought, it kind of sounds like motherhood. Anyway, every time I bring up conflict resolution and the way our church teaches us to do it and why our church teaches us to do it and the way our church kindly makes us do it, it's the worst sometimes, I'll be very honest. But every time I talk about it, I get a lot of questions from you guys afterwards. And so I know that that is definitely a big deal, a hard deal, and something we would much rather just pretend is not a thing. But I'm here to tell you today, it is a thing. And it actually is a really good thing if you just stick in it, even when you don't want to. So today I'm going to talk to Rob, and we're going to talk about conflict in families, in marriage, with friends. He's going to give some really practical tips. It's all very, very good stuff. So you're probably going to want to get some pen and paper and listen up. Let's go ahead and jump right in. Hey, Rob, how are you this morning?
I am doing great. It's been a packed morning already.
I heard you had to run to bring a lunch to a kid or something.
Yes. Well, this day started out kind of abnormally. Three of our boys are in our kind of local elementary school here, and it was Dad and Donuts morning. Thank you, PTA.
Oh, yeah.
So instead of like dropping kids off at 7:45, we were there at 7:05 this morning.
Which doesn't feel like that big of a difference, but it really is.
Well, I think what I realized this morning is I just need to feed my kids donuts every morning, because my kid that is like total Srugs in the morning, he's my little kindergartner. I was like, hey, bro, Dad and Donuts, it's 6:30. His feet were on the ground. He's tying his shoes. So we started there. And yeah, one of my kids has been getting over strep. We had an amoxicillin reaction kind of day 8. So now he's on some more awesome antibiotic, which I just dropped off with a little Dr. Pepper, because my family loves Dr. Pepper.
That's good. Kind of rounds it out.
Yeah. So it's been a full morning already, and I'm just pumped to be on with you.
Yes, this is going to be so fun. Okay, so the reason I asked you to be on is because what man does not want to be on a mom podcast? I knew this was going to be a dream come true of sorts.
Besides my wife's episode, I love your, was it Friends of Our Neighborhood? Friends of My Neighborhood episode?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Totally love that. But anyway, I am pumped to be on here.
Yes. So, okay, whenever I talk about conflict, we talk a lot about it at our church. And I don't realize, because I've been going there for so many years, I don't realize that it's not a thing that everybody knows about or is at least encouraged to do. And so when I talk about it, I get so many requests for, what's that thing you said that your church does, and how do they do that, and where can I get it? And so I thought, since you're like the king of conflict, I might as well ask you to talk about it. Do you like that title?
Gosh, you know, I think I will down the road, but you know, it's kind of like, oh great, Rob has to jump in with us, and I just want to help people kind of take the next step.
Yeah, tell us about what you do at church.
So kind of my role, I kind of do a couple different things, but we have community groups at our church, which doesn't mean a lot to a lot of people, but essentially it's just where a group of people is just committed to help each other grow. It's hard to stay in relationships. Gosh, even with your spouse, it just gets hard at times. And so I think the more you're on a mission together, so whether it's a business organization and hey, our goal is to put out this product and we are all on board with that, whether you're part of a local church or another faith expression, we are on mission together. I think it's all the more important that division just sets in really slowly. It kind of creeps in and it will absolutely destroy your culture and your mission and kind of everything else if you don't really learn how to deal with conflict. And so that's for your kids, helping them do that, you know, in your marriage. You know, I just think about, you know, I know, you know, for us plus three other families went to Cancun this year. And these are friends that
I felt jealous about that.
I know. We've been talking about it for 6 years. Since our kids started kindergarten, we've been like, how do we get to the beach together, like a classy beach? And I kept thinking about those friends who are probably the most dear friends in my life, that when I think about what stirs my affection for those friends, it's not the fact that we had this blissful week in Cancun, mm-hmm. you know, or we've done other family vacations. It's we have been diligent with each other to keep short accounts. We've been diligent to, you know, like 2 weeks ago when this family came over and we just had to work through some stuff. It was about kindergarten soccer, of all things. But yeah. It's like our families were not on the same page. And it's because the husbands didn't communicate well. And then, you know, Ryan and Allie were back over last week because, you know, I said something that was really confusing, that was just hurtful. And it wasn't what I intended. But, you know, I totally understand why they received it that way. It just made sense. But it's like when I think about what serves my affection with that group of friends, it's like not the beach, not the other vacations, family vacations we've taken together. It is the fact that we have just spent hours together trying to make sure I understand what you're talking about. Yeah. And just resolving conflict with our kids.
I'm going to pause real quick to tell you about one of our show sponsors today, Adventures with Archer. Do your kids seem to talk about the same things over and over? Legos, horses, Star Wars, Harry Potter. That's my life. But do you ever wish that you could like see what's actually going on inside their hearts and their minds? Which, not that those things are not actually going on, but there's got to be more in there somewhere. Do you struggle with wondering how you can help them grow in their relationship with God? I am here to tell you about a resource my family loves and I've spent my own money on, is Adventures with Archer journals. They were created to help kids ages 4 to 10 years old, my kids are both of those things, to connect scripture to their lives, create meaningful conversations with their parents, and cultivate quiet time habits. The cool thing is, it's a little journal, so you're capturing their memories, the cute things they say, their handprints, their favorite things at this time in their lives. These journals are adorable. They have tiny, cute woodland creature illustrations. They're the perfect addition to your daily routine. So Easter is this Sunday. And if you're just now realizing that, or you are still needing to shop for your kids' Easter baskets, like I am, the newly updated Spring Archer Journal will make a perfect addition among all that candy. So visit adventureswitharcher.com to grab yours. That's adventureswitharcher.com. So, okay, when you said earlier, community group doesn't mean that much to a lot of people, I think it's because you can just kind of decide, like, some community groups are like based on semesters or based on, you know, feelings. And so at our church, it's like so serious. Yeah. Community group carries so much weight that I know a lot of people, they're not interested in coming to our church because they're like, that's a little crazy. But the amount of growth that I've even personally had, because it's not easy to get out of a community group.
Right.
But the growth that happens is astronomical. So can we talk first about, have you always been somebody who was good at conflict? Because you're very good at it now, because it's like kind of your whole job. But
I'll go to that, you know, that question. But just, I think what I've seen in the 10 years of doing this, so no, I've not always been great at this. I'm still learning. I mean, literally, I've gotten feedback from people that I have met this year, 2018, that are like, hey, when you were trying to help our group resolve conflict, it did not bless me. And it's just like, that is so, thank you. Thank you for loving me enough to tell me I don't want to frustrate people, you know? And so whether Old Testament, New Testament, it's like, hey, love your neighbor. It's like, man, I want to love people. I don't want to frustrate people.
And people think that not being in conflict is the loving thing. And it's just,
no, it's not. Conflict is inevitable. What we've seen is some community groups are, you know, semester based, or some of, hey, just, you know, talk about the pastor's sermon in your group. And, you know, we're just kind of going, we kind of have what we call closed groups there. So you jump in a group and you're kind of in it and you re-up every year together of just going, hey, do we want to still kind of continue to live on mission together? And what we found, it's crazy that people who are in the same relationships on mission together, for 3 years, they start growing exponentially because they have people that they trust. You know, these have been people that have walked through seasons with them. They've lived authentically with each other. You know, they have a realistic pick. You know, when I go, hey, here's kind of throw up on you on, hey, here's reality of my marriage. Here's where I've just blown it this week with my kids, not being gentle, you know, and so you have this foundation of trust with people. They've admonished you and rebuked you, just like, hey, the way you just spoke to your wife, that's not the guy I know you want to be. So when you've done that for 3 years together and totally imperfectly, right? I mean, none of us are, we're all figuring this out. But when groups of people have done this together for 3 years, they are healthy. It's just an exponential climb up kind of on that bell curve. So
it's crazy. I've seen that in our own group because we've been together. Gosh, I don't even know. Maybe all of us very recently, we added Victoria and Jeff. But yeah, we are all way different than we were earlier. And we've had conflict. There's been some yelling and I didn't love it.
Yeah.
And part of it might have been me, but
yeah. So I've not always been good at this. My wife, so when we got married, she would always say, it's so refreshing being around your family. So I'm the oldest of 7 kids. And she would just say, whenever I'm in your family, I know exactly where everybody stands with each other because they're going to tell you there is no elephant in the room. It is intense. And you know where you stand with everybody at all times. And so I think when Leslie and I started this thing, you know, 16 years ago, I would just withdraw. We just both bought into the lie of just going, you know, we both came from very different families, but we were just like, hey, regardless of what faith tradition you are, we identified as followers of Christ, Jesus. We just thought, hey, because we are both followers of Christ, marriage is going to be blissful. We realized 7 or 8 years into it, we got to do the things Jesus is asking us to do with each other if it's going to be the marriage we want it to be. So we really didn't even learn how to communicate and conflict well, and, you know, until probably year 8. And, you know, I think in the last year or two, we're still learning how, just in our own marriage, not even helping people in the church or helping, you know, when my oldest gets into a conflict with another kid in his school, I'm just talking about doing it with your first neighbor, which is your spouse. I'm still learning stuff even now. And, you know, what's really helpful is being around people who do it well and just learning from them. But I'm still learning. I've had some women that, like I said, that I didn't even know until I was in a room with them trying to help, you know, a group of women get on the same page. I'm just talking the last 2 weeks, 2-3 weeks, where they've just said, hey, this didn't bless me. When you said this, this was not helpful in your body language and all that stuff. So we're all in process trying to figure out how to do this better.
Right. I mean, the good thing is we're trying and we're sticking in it. Like, I couldn't believe how many meetings our community group girls had to get on the same page. I felt like I was going to have to, I don't know, like find more hours in the day somehow. But man, we're stronger than we were before. Yeah. So, okay, let's talk about conflict in marriage.
Sure.
What would you say you see people do? And most of my listeners are women, you know, I mean, it's human nature, but we tend to think it's the other person. What do you counsel married people?
Well, I mean, one of the most helpful kind of acronyms that we use at our church, and I didn't come up with it. I'm trying to remember the title of the book. It's like got a horrible cover on it, but it's basically the acronym WENI, W-E-N-I. And it's just, we usually go to one of those four patterns. We withdraw, we escalate, we negative interpret, or we invalidate. So, you know, with me, I'm a classic withdrawer, which means I just kind of don't want to deal with it. And I just want to think, hey, time will just take care of whatever issue it is.
Okay.
And that could be anything. I mean, if I just told you some of the conflicts, things that Leslie and I just thought time would fix that it really didn't. And it's little things like throwing a towel in the sink. And that's like disgusting to me. Or I hate to say this. This is like going to discredit me with every woman on here. But when we got married, I used to come home, take off my shoes and put them on the table.
What?
Leslie's like, that is disgusting. You know, and so.
Why on the table,
I
man?
No, I guess because they were kind of eye level or something. But, you know, when we would get just all these strong preferences we have, you know, I just kind of didn't want to deal with it. I just thought, man, she'll kind of get over it. I'll get over it. Or, you know, I would just have the martyr syndrome, which is, oh, I'm just going to die to self. And at the end of the day, it's like, hey, you need to talk about this stuff and not just time really doesn't fix anything unless you've talked about it. And so what was crazy is when I actually started moving towards oneness and kind of the big picture for marriage is just oneness. We're making decisions together. We're talking about things. Even if we have different opinions, we are trying to move towards oneness with each other. And so one of the most helpful things for me as a withdrawer is just moving back towards Leslie and saying, I know you want to love me and not frustrate me, but hey, this is frustrating. And I know you don't want to frustrate me. Or for me just to move back towards her, because I'm a withdrawer, and just say, hey, are you frustrated right now? Because I don't want to frustrate you. I want to love you. And it's so simple. That little phrase has helped me specifically as a withdrawer move towards her in marriage. Yeah. So that's kind of the withdrawal piece, is just moving back towards oneness with your spouse. And so that'd be the same for a kid who's going to move away from a relationship if he's hurt with his best friend because, you know, they said something at school, or just another friend.
And that's what even counsel your kids having issues with other kids.
Oh, you know, we can talk specific example about kids.
Okay, no, let's stick to marriage.
Right, you know, the escalator, that's kind of the crazy person in the relationship that just wants to crank it up. You know, maybe not give the other person space. Some people just need space to just go, hey, can you just give me
15 minutes
just to go think about what you're talking about right now. And so here's what's really healthy about the escalator is you always know exactly where they are. And so I remember, you know, we've got a couple in our community group that she's an escalator, and you're kind of like, you know, when you first get to know the escalator, you're like, they're kind of crazy because they're super intense. But what's so healthy about that is, you know, very clearly where they're at. So I would just say, if you're an escalator in your marriage, you just got to be okay with just giving your spouse time, or a friend time, to just go, hey, go figure this out. And so if you're on the opposite end of that, like, we've got some people that just, they need 2 days to journal about what you're saying before they can come have a really healthy conversation. So I think just being patient if you're kind of married to an escalator. So kind of the third one, negative interpret.
That's me.
Yeah, not always, but I would just say this shows up more with women, and the invalidator shows up more with men. Mm-hmm. The crass example would be like, I love your dress you're wearing right now. The husband said that, and the wife would respond like, you think I'm fat? And it's like, no, I really like your dress. So I would just say, look, the more unhealthy you are, you're going to just, when we all are not healthy, or when we're kind of in a crazy cycle, we're always going to kind of go to a negative interpret place, because we're not going to believe the other person really has our best interests in mind. Yeah. So anyway, negative interpret. And I think for that, if you are a negative interpret, or you're married to someone, you know, the goal of marriage is oneness, the goal of communication, I would say, is seeking understanding. And so, you know, there's a great proverb that says, a fool finds no delight in understanding, but only in airing his own opinion. So that's where you've just got to all the more go, hey, what do you mean by that?
Yeah.
And versus react to, you know, the crass example, you think of that. No, hey, what are you saying?
Yeah.
And then the last pattern is just invalidators. This is where I think men usually drift towards, because we want to fix the problem. A healthy person has a wide range of feelings. If we're going to follow Jesus, you know, he wept, you know, he was just sorrowful. You know, we just see this full range of emotions with Jesus. And so kind of one of our healthiest days in our marriage early on was Leslie just said, you are emotionally detached. And I've never seen you cry. I don't feel like you have feelings. She's like, I think you need to go get some help for that. And she was totally right. Okay. But all that to say is, where women are usually really healthy is, you know, they feel more feelings than usually a guy does, which is, look, I've never read this. This is just Rob Berry. Guys kind of have four feelings. Like, I'm happy, I'm hungry, I'm horny. Yeah. And I don't know if I can say that. And
I knew if you weren't saying it, you should be.
Maybe we have three feelings. And so
I was like, what's the fourth? Yeah. That's kind of all the ones I can
think of. And if you're outside of those three feelings, it's like, okay, what's the solution to the problem? And so all that to say is, instead of really kind of doing what's healthy, which is, hey, how are you feeling right now? Or what are all the emotions? Even if there's a problem, I need to understand how you're feeling right now before we just jump to together trying to come up with, is there a solution for this? So
yeah, I know my husband has a hard time knowing what he's feeling, and he would try and just sit and be like, what am I feeling? Nothing. I'm really literally feeling nothing. But there is stuff going on. But
one of the healthiest things I've started doing with my little team at Watermark is there's this book called Search for Significance. It's really thick, but it's a great book for introspection. And in there, and I'm sure he borrowed this from somebody, but there's a feelings wheel in there. And so it starts like there's this inner circle of six feelings, and then there's two other kind of concentric circles around that. And we'll just start our team meeting with that, which is, hey, what are you feeling this morning? Because myself, more than any other person, I need to grow in just putting my finger on a feeling. And I think if you've got boys in your house, men need help getting an emotional vocabulary. And I think it's like, hey, I'd love for my kids to leave my house, my boys specifically, with more feelings than those three.
Yeah. And it's interesting because my son is so in tune to my feelings, his feelings, all the feelings, feelings of the people on the TV. But my daughter's like, I'm fine. So my daughter needs a feelings wheel. But we actually do use that, and it's helpful.
Lately, my family's been going fishing a lot, which I never kind of saw as something my family would do. And to be honest, I'm just the photographer because I refuse to touch any of that stuff. It's way too gross. But because of that, we've been getting a lot of really good pictures, and I don't want them just to sit on my phone. So I wanted to tell you about Canvas People because they are who I use to get my pictures on my walls. They're great for decoration. The prints look like pieces of art. They're really high quality. I have tons of them in my house. So I know that you're going to love Canvas People. I have a special offer that you can use to get an 11 by 14 Canvas People print for free. These usually cost $69.99, but for Mom Sterling Well listeners, you just have to pay shipping and handling. So get your own 11 by 14 Canvas People print for free. Just visit canvaspeople.com, upload your photo, and enter the code MSW. This is a limited time offer for today's listeners, so go to canvaspeople.com today and use code MSW for your free print.
Okay, what fruit have you seen from people digging in and working out conflict? Does it actually make things better for a mom who her marriage is kind of in shambles?
Gosh, yes. I mean, the phrase we use a lot with our boys more than anything, and we kind of take it from Jesus saying, you hypocrite, first get the log out of your own eye, then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. So all that to say is, you know, that's just a great passage on humility. And whenever you're moving towards a hard conversation or just addressing, hey, this hurt me when you did this, just to have humility, you haven't figured it out, your perspective may not be right. So kind of the phrase we use in our house, hey, you've got to stay in your circle. All you can control, if you're married to a crazy spouse or if you're married to a spouse that it maybe it feels like they love work more than being married to you or whatever, they love coaching more than me, you know, all you can do is stay in your circle, and all you can do is control what the things that you can control. There's another book called Love and Respect, and they just talk about the crazy cycle. And the crazy cycle is just essentially that you have two spouses that are just basically reacting to each other and trying to get what they want. And that cycle it's like a downward staircase. It just keeps going, spiraling down and down. What reverses that thing is when somebody does the right thing, basically stays in their circle and just controls what they can control. So if you are married to someone, I would just say all you can do is get healthy.
Okay. And I think not wait for the other person. Not say that you would if they would, because that's a lie.
Right. You know, I think all the time when we think about marriages, hey, I took the vow, sickness and health to death do us part. And I think most of us, when we sign up for that, I mean, I know when I was standing across the altar from Leslie or whatever, I'm thinking physical sickness there, not emotional health, emotional sickness. And you know, my wife, I'm like, she is a spark plug. She's magnetic. She's like the most fun person in the room. So I'm like, I feel like I've got the spouse that everybody wants to get married, be married to. But it's still so hard to just do this in a healthy way. And so all you can do is grow, you know, and those four patterns go, okay, where do I usually go to? And I think asking your spouse, one of the healthiest things Leslie and I did is, hey, which one do you think I am?
Because they can tell.
Oh my gosh. Yes. You know, there's two people that'll tell you the truth. You know, somebody who loves you or your enemy, you know. So just allowing your spouse to speak into that and go, okay, I asked, and just having humility to go, I trust you that you see me more clearly than I see myself. And so we just like, Leslie knows I'm a withdrawer and she knows she's a negative interpreter. And sometimes we'll just say, hey, I think you're negative interpreting right now, or I think you're withdrawing right now.
It's good too, because then if you have them tell you what your bent is, then you kind of know what is in your circle. Because sometimes we literally can't tell what is in our circle that we need to fix.
Yes, absolutely. And I think also just another helpful thing is, hey, we need to have this conversation. When is a good time for us to have this conversation? Okay. You know, there's another acronym, I think in that same book, just HALL, I'm probably not going to remember, but it's just not good to have a conversation with your hungry, angry, I can't remember what the L is, but T is tired. And it's not a good idea to have a conversation when you're laying down in bed, you know? And so I think just giving your spouse an option to go, hey, you tell me when a good time to have this conversation is, and let's just have this conversation.
That's another way to honor them.
Yes. Another thing that's helped in our marriage, I don't know if the Enneagram means anything to you, but I'm a 1, married to a 9. And so...
Okay. Me too. What?
Come on. How? Love those 9s. But everything's very black and white to me. And if you don't know anything about the Enneagram, it's just... the kind of test like DISC or a strength finder, but it's more about not what are your outputs, but what kind of internally motivates you. So here's what's been really helpful in our marriage. We've had to do this exercise at times. It's called the speaker listener. But for me, I think to just get out a journal and just to say, okay, hey, tell me what you're thinking right now. If we just can't get on the same page, and I will write it down. And I will say, hey, Leslie, is this what you're saying? And there's been times where she has said no 6 times, like, no, that is not what I'm talking about.
Wow. And you're literally writing down everything you're hearing.
I'm just trying to summarize what I think she's saying. And it's, she'll, you know, no, Rob, that's not what I'm saying. Okay. Hey, I say it again. And sometimes there's multiple bullet points where it's like, okay, yes, that is great. Okay. What else? Okay, so let me walk through. This is what you feel. Boom, 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 boom. Yes, that's how you feel. Great. Thank you. And that has to go both ways. We don't have to solve anything. I just got to make sure I understand where you're coming from. So now that I know where you're coming from, now I can kind of plug that in my Rodberry equation. And I can go, okay, how can I, based on how you're doing, how you feel, what you're thinking, how can I love you? Because if I don't have an accurate picture of that, I'm probably not going to move towards you in a way that really blesses you or loves you.
Right. Well, and I think feeling heard is like 98% of it.
Yes, I know. And it's so hard.
It is so hard. Brene Brown in one of her books says, she uses with her husband, the story that I'm telling myself is blank. And that's really helpful for me to like diffuse things. And so since I'm negatively interpreting, I can tell Eric my negative story about what I am making up. And he's like, but that's not the right story. Yeah. So,
one other thing about marriage, this is like a quick one.
Yeah.
But I think reading a marriage book together and like maybe even let the guy pick it. Because
for some reason.
Yeah. So, I mean, sex has always been a really hard thing to talk about in our marriage. And so, one of the best books I think that has just helped us, and it's crazy. We read this book called Sheep Music. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
I've seen the cover. Yeah.
Yeah. So, whether sex or whatever, finances, but what's really helpful for something like that is, it'll say, hey, women feel this way, you know, or men feel this way. It could be communication, whatever the topic is. And just where you're reading that together and say, hey, Leslie, he says this. Do you feel that way? I feel like that allowed us to kind of get through so many hard conversations that it just kind of removed a ton of insecurity because the expert is saying this. And it just allowed Leslie to go, no, I don't feel that way at all. So he, you know, or the woman writer just allowed us to kind of bridge conversations we just are way too insecure to have. So
that's so good. Or you'd have it wrong and they'd get offended, but this third party said it. And it's so good. Okay. So marriage.
I feel like
we've got that solved.
Yes.
What about friendship? And what do we do if we're just, something's really bugging us about a friend? How do we know if they're a good enough friend to enter into that? Is it worth it? Is it too much? Am I too much if I want to have a conflict?
Yes.
And how? Because the conflict field guide is so like, how would you walk people through that?
Yeah. I think there's a couple things that normally pop up. Just let's say you've got a group of friends. And, you know, gossip kind of pops up in this weird way, like
asking for a prayer request.
Oh, totally. But usually it happens like, let's say there's a group of people and somebody will, after book club or whatever, somebody will pick up the phone and be like, did it bother you when so-and-so said that, or did that rub you the wrong way? And
yeah,
you're kind of wanting validation in that, but it's really at the end of the day, it's gossip. You know, there's a great proverb that just says gossip separates close friends. And so I think, you know, one of the best just things we can do for people is just say, you know, shutting that down quick and saying, hey, have you told that person that? And usually it's like, no, hey, it's not a big deal. No, don't worry. And it's like, it's a big enough deal for you to ask me. I think you need to go have that conversation with them. If I'm frustrating somebody like at a book club or something, and somebody's having that side conversation with me, I want to know it. And, you know, there's another proverb that, you know, better is an open rebuke than a hidden love. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. If I'm rubbing someone the wrong way, or if I'm just being a jackleg, the most loving thing somebody can do is just tell me about it.
Yeah.
And so what happens, where that starts to erode friendships down the road is like, okay, you have that conversation once and you have it twice. And somewhere down the road, that person finds out that you may have been part of that conversation, and it just erodes friendship.
Yeah. And what does it say about you as a Christ follower?
Not a lot. Yeah. But it's so prevalent. It's just, that's kind of the way people roll. That's the way we roll. So I think it's just like, if you really value the friendship, then you're going to love them enough to just say, hey, this frustrated me.
Yeah. And I liked how your conversation starter.
Yeah.
That you gave me, tell them how you would start that.
Yeah. Which is, I know you love me. You are a great friend to me. I think it's just validating who they are or who you want them to be to you.
I hope that one day you're a great friend.
Right. I would never say that. Right. But hey, this is who you are to me. And this is where I see us going. And man, I care about us too much. I might have this totally wrong. I always say, I mean, I deeply believe humility looks good on anybody. So I think the way you go and have that conversation with a friend is, I might be totally wrong. Like, my perception might be off. This could be my deep insecurity here. Mm. But hey, when you said this, what did you mean by this? And that just kind of hurt, you know? And so I might be totally the weak person here. I might totally have it wrong. This might totally not been what you mean. Man, I care about us too much to not tell you that. And that just stung a little bit.
Yeah. Can I ask you, how has that been received? Because somebody who hasn't done that before might feel like, oh my gosh, what if they laugh at me? What if they, because I can only assume that it goes way better than you think.
So I'll tell you, like, with somebody that, let me just give you the spectrum of somebody I really care about. And look, it's always hardest with your spouse because they know you the best. But I would just say, for a good friend or somebody that I have viewed like for a couple of years as an enemy, not an enemy, but like, there's a guy in our elementary school that I had this weird role. Like, I think you used the word pastor, but you know, two of my friends that I love dearly that are married to each other, they're in a totally different life stage to me. And we were meeting together because we were not on the same page at all. And she just was like, hey, you're my pastor. And I just stopped her, and with full like transparency and authenticity, I was like, I have never viewed myself like that in our relationship. I viewed myself as your friend and two people that are trying to live on mission together. But what's weird kind of in this, you know, the neighborhood we're in is I kind of have this role where, you know, I've got to be in some really hard meetings just for marriages or helping people get on the same page. And so I just happened to be in a meeting where some friends are really on different pages, were angry at each other. And I was trying to help them get on the same page. And anyway, had to say some hard things in there. And then there's this one guy who for 2 years, every time I saw him, like, his body language just screamed, I hate you.
And, really? In your neighborhood?
Yeah. And so, it's really neat, isn't it? So, I'm just speaking on one side of the spectrum, but I think it's the same for the other side. So I remember just going, hey, can we grab lunch?
With the guy who hates you?
Yes. Or just that I thought based on his body language. And I just remember starting out with, hey, I'm totally insecure. So you need to know that. I don't read people well all the time. I misdiagnose things, but we've got a long road together because our kids, they've got like 9 more years together in school.
Or, hey, are you planning to move? Because help you find a place.
I know a realtor. But, you know, so it just feels like whenever we're in the same room, you don't want to look at me. And so, like, that might totally be my insecurity, but do you feel that way? I usually just say, have I hurt you? Have I frustrated where all I'm doing when I'm coming into that relationship or I'm trying to stay in my circle and go, have I hurt you? Have I frustrated you? You know, we'll get to the fact that, hey, you, this is the way you come across. And I just remember he, like, after 2 years of me feeling this way, he goes, no, man, I don't feel that way at all. What? And he goes, man, it was just messy. We are all making bad decisions there. And I'm like, for 2 years, if I would have had that conversation earlier, it would have just saved me so much energy. So I think okay, so now we're flipping to the other side with somebody you would call a friend who may not even have the same worldview of you. I think going into that and just going, hey, have I hurt you, or have I frustrated you, or because I care about you. But I think always starting there and just going, okay, hey, you said this. And usually, almost always, those conversations go well. When you come in with that kind of posture, usually they end well. I think when you come in just guns blazing, it's like that's where people get defensive, and that's where it just goes, it kind of gets wheels off. So does that help? I don't know if that answered your question or.
No, it really does. I think that around the culture of our church, you just hear, hey, will you forgive me for a blank? Yeah. All the time you hear it. It's happening, you know, I don't know. So it feels like a normal thing. But sometimes I think people think it has to be like a certain level of relationship to do that. But I feel like keeping short accounts, it can be, you know, I think I said something the other day to this person and they took it wrong, or I wish I hadn't said it. I don't know them that well, but I'm just going to go say, hey, will you forgive me for this? So I don't think it has to be a certain level of intimacy or relationship to do that. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would say, like, if it's somebody that I had a one-time interaction with.
Yeah, maybe not a one-time.
But, or two, you know, but if this is somebody I have relationship, or I'm going to increasingly have relationship based on, hey, they're in my Boy Scout troop, or they're in my soccer team, or they're a parent of my soccer team that is like yelling at the kids, at the ref, or yelling at, it's like, hey, I mean, I just don't know if that's helpful. But if it's just a one-off and a stranger, it's like, hey, I'm just going to believe that they're just having a hard day and I don't know what's going on with them. So, but a neighbor or, you know, somebody that I'm just going to increasingly kind of cross paths with, all the more important, I think.
Yeah, that's so good. Okay, let's talk about with our kids.
Yes.
Conflict resolution.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, this has two things, like in the house and then with friends is how I would kind of think about with kids. Yeah, so I've got a 6-year-old, I've got a 9-year-old, I've got a 11, almost 12-year-old. And so, gosh, in the house, let me just tell you where I want to go. I want to put cameras all over my house because I just want to figure out who really started the fight.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, that's not helpful because down the road, there's just not going to be cameras where you can track your kids and know, were you provoking your brother? Mm-hmm. Did you hit your, you know? And so it's like, we kind of just keep going back to, what is your part? Stay in your circle. What did you do? No. What did you do? And we're just trying to help them get to, usually it's, I provoked my brother is kind of where it comes down to. Or did you respond in gentleness? You know, did you yell? You know, it just, another proverb just talks about how a gentle response calms things down, but a harsh response stirs up anger. And so helping our kids know, hey, how you respond matters. So what we try to do with our boys is just stay in your circle. If they cannot, if it is just finger pointing, we are like, okay, you need to go to your room and you cannot come out until you figure out what did you do? What is your part of the conflict? And one of my friends, like, she told me that her dad used to make her brothers literally go outside and carry wood from one pile to the other one until they could work it out together.
Oh, wow.
So I think one of the things I always think about, what do I want to do as a dad when my kids leave my house? Is like, there's kind of three things I want to impart to them. One, I just want them to like see a dad who is affectionately crazy for their mom and just a dad that ultimately wants to serve their mom, not get something from her. You know, the second thing is my dad, he took seriously Jesus and his word. And the third thing is, and a lot of this just comes out of our baggage from our past, but the third thing is I want my kids to leave my house and be able to take responsibility when they don't do it right. And so he's like, there's three things. So coming back to my kids is we just spent a ton of time on, hey, what is your part here? And if you can't figure out your part, We're going to help you figure that out, but you're going to lose privilege if you're just going to be a finger pointer. Look, that is so much easier said than done, where it's just, you know, your kids are in a downward spiral for an hour and you're just like, how many times can we have this conversation? So we talk a ton about tone. We talk a ton about provoking and just getting the taking responsibility. So it's the hardest in your house, I would say. Now, with kids in your school or kids at church, or I would say by and large, parents don't know how to help their kids resolve conflict. Usually a parent's first response, like if something happened in a classroom, by and large, the parents are going to think, they're going to assume that it wasn't their kid's fault.
Because their kids never make mistakes.
Yeah.
I'm such a jerk mom. I'm like, yeah, that was my kid.
Like a parent would never usually say that, but functionally, that's kind of how it plays out. And so when our kids come home, and I'll give you an example. When our kids come home and they have had a fight or they are not good with one of their friends, usually parents are, I'm so sorry, and what happened, and I'm kind of going to coddle you, you know, versus when Jackson Berry, I'm sorry, just name my other. So I'm just going with him because he's our oldest and he's had more reps. Let's just leave it at that. But when he's had a problem with a friend, our first response is, hey, I'm so sorry. And, you know, we don't want to invalidate, but it's like, hey, what do you think was your part in that? And so we're going to help him get in the circle. And so we've had, I'm thinking that there are several dads where we've said, I've called the dad. And I try to do it with the dad. It sounds like our kids got in, are not good with each other. Can we, the four of us, sit down in a room together and help them get on the same page?
Good.
And so these are people that go to our church. These are not people that go to our church. These are non-church people.
Just anybody.
Yeah. And I'll just say, hey, here's what I'm going to ask my son to do, you know, which is I'm going to help him try to figure out when we come to that meeting, what is his part? What could he have done better? That's what we care about more than anything else, is helping him stay in a circle. So it's fascinating. Mm. When we've done that, let's just say with people we don't go to church with, you know, and it's like an hour process. And my son always goes first.
Okay.
Leaders go first. Leaders take responsibility first. Leaders own their part first. And you walk in with humility. It's like, Dad, you know. But it is crazy how disarming that is when you're moving forward and just teaching your kids to go first. When I'm in a marriage, I need to go first, which is, how have I hurt you? How have I frustrated you? You know, and it is painful. You're trying to help your kid. Okay, Jackson Berry, what did you hear him say? And literally, you're just modeling for that other kid, helping your kid understand how that kid feels, why he did the things he did, what your son did to contribute. All you're doing there is trying to help your kid stay in his circle. And it's crazy. I mean, just hear parents go, that was awesome. Thank you. Thank you for doing that. And so I think it's like, how do we raise a generation of kids that take responsibility? You know, one of the greatest, regardless of how you felt or about how your parents felt about, you know, Kennedy as a president, one thing that guy did exceptionally well in the Bay of Pigs, when that thing was just an absolute mess in Cuba, is he stood up and took responsibility for it. And he, you know, the buck stopped with him. And I would just say, what we see, you know, in the last decade, two decades with just public leaders, whether they're business owners, you know, government, or just, who's the scapegoat and who can we point the finger at and how can we blame shift? And it's like, we've got to raise up a group of kids that take responsibility. You know, like people look back on Kennedy, they look back on him fondly. And, you know, we always think the opposite is like, hey, if the other person can just take the blame for it, then I'll look good. And it's like, no, really, people want to be around humble people. Friend, you know, your kids, their friends want to be around people that are humble. But I think those two things of when your kid walks in the room, what did he do? And then helping your kid go, hey, what did you hear him say? Hey, friend, is that what you said? And it's kind of the same thing I try to do with my wife. But I think those two skills help your kids. And now, like that one friend I'm thinking of, they kind of came to a conclusion of, we need a 6-month break from each other. And they were like beef fries, and they did not talk, hang out for 6 months. Now they're like inseparable.
Okay. Did they come up with that themselves?
Yes. My son probably did more than anything. But what was great about me and this dad, that I would say at the time, we weren't really close. We were acquaintances because our kids playing sports together. But I just said, hey, boys, you guys have a long road together. And we love you guys too much. I care about my relationship with this dad. And we've got to let you know, every time you get to this point where you can't figure it out, me and this dad, we're going to jump in with you too, because we care about your relationship. We care about our relationship as parents too much to let your kind of a relationship erode. We didn't use that because there were kids, but So I think just having that commitment level with other friends' parents is really helpful.
Yeah. Okay. So let me ask, because I think for a lot of people that would feel like, whoa, that's extreme. How do I know this is that big of a deal? Because I think we want to downplay everything that's going to make us uncomfortable.
Yeah. Well, I would say it is a big deal. Like, I just think, let me just think about myself. I need to have a conversation with Leslie. If I'm frustrated about something for, you know, over a day or two, if I'm thinking about something, I probably need to have a conversation. Mm-hmm. If that goes, the same's true for a friend. You know, if this is kind of consuming mind space for me, or, you know, if you're on a, like a Windows PC, whenever you hit that task manager, you know, and it's like, hey, all these applications are open. If you've kind of got an application open with a friend or with your spouse or your kid does with another one, that's taken up kind of your processor speed, you need to go have this conversation. And so sometimes your kid's not even friends with this person. Maybe they're bullying or being, you know, according, they're just, you would say, man, it sounds like this kid's just being a punk. And there is just a great way to, once again, help your kids grow in humility, where you're going to go and just, your kid's just going to ask the question of, hey, have I hurt you? Have I frustrated you? You know, the kid's usually like, no. Yeah, then it just allows your kid to go, it hurts when you say this on the playground, you say this, you know, but it's your kid moving towards that other kid with humility, trying to stay in a circle. And normally, you know, there's just, I mean, kids are just mean. Look, including my kids, they are mean with each other. But I think, so whether it's this is your kid's friend or whether it's just some quote unquote punk kid on the playground, it's just really good opportunity to help your kids. If you train your kids in those two things, what are you saying as a friend and walking into something with humility, that is going to bless their future spouse like crazy. That's going to bless their work environment in 20 years like crazy. But it's hard. It's hard to be consistent as a parent, I think, with that stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So have you ever had the other person, they've got nothing. They have nothing to contribute in what they did wrong. And how do you talk to your kid about that later when you're like, way to go for your circle? Or do they usually have something?
Yeah. I mean, that goes true for adults too, which is just going, okay, you know, I just... That value in the New Testament of a fruit of the Spirit is patience. And, you know, 1 Thessalonians 5 just says, be patient with all men. I'm like, how about your spouse? Yeah. It is hard. You know, we're just going to be married to an imperfect spouse, and your spouse is going to be married to someone imperfect till the day we die. That's just a fact. And so I think with your kids, of just going, okay, trying to help them kind of draw two conclusions of, hey, you just got to be patient, or trying to help them see, like, a kid who's mean or a kid that just doesn't take responsibility, that doesn't happen in a vacuum. It's usually because life is hard in their house and they're not seeing their parents model that or instruct it. And, and so I think just helping your kids just go as much as you can, just be patient with them. And at some point it's like, hey, you got to love them, whether they're enemy or they feel like your enemy or not. And, you know, love, Jesus says, love your enemies, right? And pray for those who persecute you. And so I don't want my kids to have my faith. I want their faith to be their own. And so trying to help put them in front of Jesus and go, hey, this is what Jesus says about somebody who is not taking responsibility, not owning their stuff. And I think you need to pray for them and just go, man, I don't think they have it as easy as you have it in their house. One of the most fun things as a parent, like one of the things I have to clean up with my kids more than anything is the tone I have with my boys when I'm like, I asked you 8 times to do it and I'm going to make my tone 1 or 2 clicks to the right. And one of my kids more than anybody just like, stop yelling at me. And look, here's the deal. Like, he would say, I'm not being gentle and I'm not being kind in those moments. And he, you know, I'm like, Jesus would say it in a way to him in a way where he would not feel that way. And so I'm like, I've got to grow in this area. Even if it's like, you know, I think I'm a, and I'm using a totally guy analogy here, but when you think about sandpaper, the lower the grit number, like if you've got an 80 or 40 grit, that's really coarse. And a 200 grit or higher is not as coarse. So it's like, hey, I might think I'm a 80 grit here or whatever. And Jackson's like, I need you to be a a 200 grit sandpaper here. So it's like, hey, if Jackson's saying that hurt, your tone hurt me. And it's like, hey, Jackson, will you forgive me? You're right. That was not gentle. That was not kind. And so, look, I totally not need to grow that. And I don't want to make an excuse for that. But when I think one of the most helpful things I can do with Jackson is like one family, I would just say his dad is a yeller, like a true yeller. Is that, am I saying that right? Or is that too like Texas, like not the color, but he yells at his kids.
Like the dog, old yeller?
Yeah. Put him down. It's like, hey, can he go play at that house? And I'm like, yes, go hang out at that house because it helps you understand.
I'm not yelling at you.
Yeah, not that I don't need to grow in the way I'm gentle, but just to help you see that, hey, that friend, when he's maybe not taking responsibility, that's just not happening in a vacuum. That's kind of being modeled to his family.
Interesting.
So
okay.
More patience, more grace, more Jackson. We gotta love him. We gotta give him patience so that kid gets there. Yeah,
that's good. Okay, so let me ask you just one more question because we're out of time, but this is just so good. Regarding humility with your kids, I feel like this might just be me and I'm the only one, but it feels like, at least with my daughter, and she's
so sweet.
She's so sweet, but she's also good at manipulating, and so am I. And so we just kind of spend a lot of time trying to manipulate each other. But sometimes she'll say things like, you're yelling at me, so that we are not having to deal with the actual task at hand. And so I tend to, instead of going, you're right, I was yelling, even if I wasn't.
Yeah.
I don't want to say, you're right, I was yelling, because I wasn't, because it's also not what the issue is. Do you find that just saying, you know, I could have been kinder, helps you get back to the issue, or does it get you further off?
That is a great question. So this goes for adults and this goes for kids too. And I like to separate those two things in, okay, what is the message and how is the message being delivered? Because, you know, there's a great proverb that says, the man that loudly blesses his neighbor early in the morning will be taken as a curse. It's like, hey, who doesn't want to be encouraged, praised, blessed by somebody else? But if you're doing it before I've had my cup of coffee and you're yelling through my 5:30, that is not okay. So anyway, all that just communicates how we do something really matters. So I want to separate something with the message and how's the message being delivered. And a lot of times, unhealthy people, and we are all this on some level of the spectrum, but we want to invalidate the message because of the way it's being delivered. Mm-hmm. And kids more than anybody. And so I think even if you're with a friend, and so they want to make everything about how it's being delivered. It's like, okay, hey, I want to separate these two things.
So you just say that.
Yeah. Hey, let's talk about two things. Okay. Let's talk about how I'm saying it. Can we talk about that second? I think you're wanting some yes. Okay. And let's talk about, hey, what did you hear me say? I want to make sure they're crystal clear on the message. And if they're crystal clear on the message, then it's like, okay, let's talk about now. How do you feel like I said it? I think separating those two things is really helpful.
But doing the message first.
Yeah. And I think it's just, if it's with your kid or with a friend, if you think the message is wrong, hey, let's wait till dad gets home or let's wait till mom gets home to talk about the message. And if you're a friend, you know, you say something, you're trying to help somebody grow, see a blind spot, or just, hey, this hurt me. And you kind of feel like you get punched in the mouth, you know, and this the message isn't received. It's like, I care about our friendship too much. Can we just bloop somebody else in? I don't care who it is. Let's bring one of our friends that we are mutually friends with into the circle, because I'm okay being wrong, but I care about you and I too much, if I'm right, to just let this kind of go, you know, without being addressed. But I'm totally great being wrong. And I think with, you know, with your kids, it's like, hey, let's wait till someone says, because maybe I'm saying the message wrong. So let's wait till mom, you know, we can have this together. But people get wrapped around the axle with the message and they don't want to deal with the message. And so they make it about how the message was delivered.
The delivery.
Yeah.
So, but you would recommend acknowledging that there could be an issue with it, but ironing out the actual message first.
Yes.
And if that can't get sorted out, bringing in a third person.
Yeah. And I think it's just like, hey, what did you hear me say? You know, and I just want to make sure they have understanding. You said the word forgiveness. And I would say that just along kind of tagged with that is one of the best things we can have our kids learn is, how do you take responsibility? And most of us as adults say, hey, I need to apologize for this. And I'm always like, okay, well, do you want to apologize? You're just saying I need to. Well, do it. Or I feel I'm sorry that this. Well, great. You're sorrowful, but you haven't taken responsibility for, or I need to ask for forgiveness for this. Okay, well, do you want to ask for forgiveness? So I think teaching our kids and using this in our marriage, we did not understand this phrase till year eight of our marriage, maybe nine, after we both kind of went through a 12-step program lesson I did. But, you know, teaching your kids, will you forgive me for fill in the blank, provoking you, hitting you, yelling at you, you know, whatever it is, that is the most valuable thing you can teach your kids, is just that simple sentence. Versus all those other ways that people think they take responsibility for it. They've never put the power in that person's hand to say, yes, I forgive you. You've asked me a question and I'm going to say yes. So anyway.
It's good. My kids can't make their mouths move when they kind of say, please forgive me. It's like they get some kind of facial paralysis when that.
I know. It's so hard. It's so hard to model. I'm just like, I just want everybody to be stuck in my world.
Where we put our shoes on the table and everything's fine.
You don't like shoes on the table? Hey, figure it out. That's so disgusting.
So funny. Yeah. I'm glad you've seen the error of yours.
Yes, you were right, Leslie. I'm so sorry. You were right.
So good. Listen, Rob, thank you so much. This was so helpful.
Hey, love this. Love your enthusiasm for life. And I can't wait to see you on Sunday.
Okay, well, I think that should probably have given you a lot of food for thought. I would like to just make a simple challenge to you today that you struggle well by talking to that one person who it came to your brain is the person you don't want to talk to. With the caveat that if they are not safe, don't do that. Don't be a dummy. But at least talk to someone about the situation, because it's obviously, like he was talking about, having a window open in the background. If you got a window open in the background, sort it the heck out. And we come up with all kinds of reasons why we're the exception to the rule. We do not have to practice biblical conflict resolution because of X, Y, and Z. We are not the exception to the rule, you guys. It is so uncomfortable to realize that. But the fact of the matter is, it is against everything in us, which is basically our flesh and sin and the brokenness of our world, to humbly go to somebody and sort something out. To humbly go to them if you've done something wrong, or to humbly go to them if you have been wronged. If we feel like we've been wrong, sometimes it's easy for us to want to go and get big and tell them what's up, but that doesn't end well either. So humility is needed on both sides. So I hope you wrote down some of the ways that Rob talked about entering into those conversations. What are some things that we can say that will diffuse the situation? So I just would encourage you to make that really hard step. It will probably not go as bad as you think. Do a lot of praying beforehand and see what God does. Sometimes we wonder in America why we don't see God working as big as we hear about in other countries or in other time periods. And I think it's because we don't put ourselves in positions, and we're often not in positions by necessity where we have to trust him and watch what he does. And so I think conflict is a really great way to die to ourselves. Unfortunately, where we live, it takes intentionality and putting ourselves in those positions of dependence on the Lord, because all of our basic needs for the vast majority of us are met so exceedingly above other parts of the world. I would encourage you to do the thing that gives you sweaty armpits and refine yourself by having to humble yourself and depend on God and see what he does. Okay, fun. So what I would love, which I think would be really encouraging to everyone, on Instagram, go to Mom Struggling Well. And when you see the picture of Rob in the posting of this episode, I would love for you, after you have your hard conversation, to go and leave a comment on, you know, you don't have to tell us names and addresses and the nitty gritties, but I talked to someone and this is what happened. This is what God did. So I'd encourage you to do that this week. All right, let me pray for us. Lord, when it comes to conflict, we just want to pretend it's not a thing. We want to say all the reasons that we don't need to face it, or all the reasons that the other person makes it impossible for us to have a good relationship with them. As I'm just sitting here praying about it, I just realize, with all the thousands of listeners, if everybody had one humble conversation trying to get everybody on the same page and united, Lord, what a force that would be. So God, I just pray for bravery. I pray for humility. I pray for spaces of time where the conversations can happen. God, I pray for wisdom. Help us see where we're kind of jerks and hard to live with. Help us bear with one another.
and do things that we think are dumb and that are not necessary, but that the other person feels like are. Obviously within healthy boundaries and all that kind of stuff, Lord. So I pray for wisdom, but I do pray that we'd be willing to bend, that we'd be willing to be flexible for the good of our brothers and sisters in Christ. Even if those brothers and sisters are our young humans living under our roofs, help us to accommodate and apologize when we need to, and always be seeking unity. Always be seeking the other person's good. God, would you cast out the fears that we have surrounding talking about these conflicts? And as mean as this is to pray, I pray that this would just be a kind of a rock in the shoe of these listeners. God, would you make it to where they are so bothered and unsettled and uncomfortable until they just do the thing and have the conversation? So I do. I pray for discomfort for all these listeners. And I'm not even sorry about it. Lord, we love you, and I know that you honor the times that we lay down what we want and what we're comfortable with for your glory. And so I pray that you would greatly honor and bless all these women who are doing the hard things regarding conflicts with people. In Jesus' name, amen.